You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
So you're pitching first. Our first topic
first.
is dining under restrictions.
Well, I feel like, Rob, whenever you're dining under restrictions because, like, you know, keep your clothes on.
Yeah, no shirt, no shoes, no service, young man.
Don't steal food from other people's plates. Those type of things, you know?
Pay for your meal. Don't dine and dash.
That's not nice. I've never done that before.
I neither. I've always wanted to, but I've never had the guts.
Right. I know somebody we used to work with who, that was like his thing he did. And he said the rule about dining and dashing is you can't get there and like eat your food and then be like, let's dine and dash. You have to plan it ahead of time. He said, not just because you're going to order the most expensive thing. He said, but your food is going to taste so good because it's going to taste like theft and adrenaline.
Oh man. You know, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of dinner that I would like to try.
Right.
Yeah.
Just get up and run.
Just get up and run.
That's mean, though. I don't think I could ever do that.
Right.
And first of all, I'm not into stealing, but even if I was, I would still feel like a jerk for the waiter.
I would feel so bad. I would feel like the poor server that got stuck with you, and you decided to be the jackhole to do the dine and dash.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but it'd be so fun, wouldn't it? Just to do it.
It does sound thrilling, right?
Yeah. I went out to dinner once with our friend and her brother to a Denny's. Mm-hmm. This was the last time that I ever went to a Denny's. Maybe one of six times, probably like one of four times in my entire life I'd ever been to a Denny's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, Denny's used to be my jam.
Yeah, no. I've never been a Denny's guy. So this was definitely the last time I ever went to a Denny's. And we're just, I don't remember why we were, the three of us were going to this Denny's. But it's just three of us and the service is okay, you know, and just three. Yeah, okay, we sit down. And her brother kind of turns and like looks down at like an imaginary child and says, yep, this way, come on. And like shoos the kid along. And then we sit down at the table and he pulls the chair out and he says to the server, oh, can we get a booster seat? And the server's like, just kind of shrugs and says, yeah, sure. And she goes and gets a booster seat and puts it down. And then, and he says, in four menus, please. She'll need a kid's menu. And so the server's like, all right. And goes and gets a kid's menu. And she just didn't care. Didn't do the whole thing. You know, he orders food for her and is like talking to her while the server's there. So is talking to this imaginary little girl. What would you like? What would you like? You know, do you want a hot dog? He orders lunch for her.
Oh my gosh, that's committed.
Yeah.
Did you know he was going to do this?
No idea.
Oh, nice.
But his sister, who's our friend, she's just like, I look at her and I'm totally confused and baffled. And she just kind of shrugs. It's just, meh.
This guy wasn't like mental, right? Like this was
no.
Like, I mean, like
he was just messing around.
Nice,
but he committed, full on committed to the whole thing. It was incredible. Wow. It was one of the most bizarre and like oddly exhilarating dining experiences I've ever had. Like I challenge somebody else out there listening right now to just if you're gonna do something, just commit to it like this guy did.
Right,
full on 100% commit to it. It was incredible. Yeah. That's really just, funny. Yeah. So, hello and welcome to Building Game Documentary Podcast. My name is Rob. That's Jason. episode 148. Today is Monday.
Episode 149.
Oh, thank you. 149. Today is Monday, April 6th, 2015. Indeed. So, there's your intro.
Indeed. Hey, gosh. When are we recording again?
14th is our next time.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun week.
It sure is.
We're going to record. You're going to have to edit the show and get it out in a day.
Yeah, well,
two days. 14th is a Tuesday. We leave.
Like 3 days.
We don't leave till Saturday. Okay,
yeah.
So you've got
We're going out. Yeah, we got a business trip, listeners.
Business trip to Florida.
To Florida, the big FL. What?
Woo!
Is that a thing people say? I don't know.
No.
You know what's funny? So we decided to try. Do you like potato chips?
Yeah,
I like potato chips. You know, I like potato chips, and Lay's has come out with this new mango salsa flavor potato chip.
Oh,
yeah. So we're like, let's give those a try. I think I ate about four of those today. That was fine. with dinner. I ate like four of them. All I can taste now is mango, but like fake mango,
yeah,
like fake potato chip mango.
Oh,
and like it's all I can smell. I feel like it's oozing out of my pores. It's like a piercing flavor. It has pierced my very soul.
Wow,
and I cannot escape it.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's not a board game though.
No,
nope. This podcast is generally about board games.
Sometimes,
not tonight though. Tonight, it's we're just cutting loose, man.
Yeah, it's true.
This is the board game-less est episode. I don't know.
No, it's not. There have been more. There have been worse.
Right.
So, but yeah, I've been. What did I play lately? Well, you came over and we had a game night.
We had a game. What did we play? I don't even remember.
We played Mushmushi. We played.
Right. Play
Card Game
Simulator.
Yeah, Card Game Simulator, and then Finish It.
We played Finish It, so, yeah. We didn't play any published games that night.
Uh-uh.
That's bizarre, dude.
Well, we only played three games, and we needed testing done, and Finish It is a game that they said, oh, we could play that. We've played that before, so.
Yeah, somebody else, our friend Ro, actually said, we could play that storytelling game you have, and I brought it with me.
And it was a good time, too. It was a good group for it.
Really it was, yeah. Everybody was into it. Yeah, man, Finish It's still fun. I'm still really happy with that.
It's very fun.
Yeah. yeah, so we played Mushi Mushi. So run us through where that is right now.
That's looking good. I added alien powers. Those are fun.
Yeah, they worked pretty well.
And there's a little tweaking that needs to be done on them, mm-hmm. but real minor stuff. Like one person gets to draw two cards, pick one, put the other one back on the top of the deck. And I thought that was cool because it was like you get to kind of hose the next guy. But after playing a whole game of that, I realized that you're always hosing
guy. One person.
It's always the same person.
Right.
So now you put that on the bottom of the deck. The other ones, you know, we did a play test, which listeners probably have heard by now.
I can't remember how that order works out.
No, actually that probably went up this week. Yeah. Okay. So, and this was the previous play test, where you get to hear, Rob destroy me, spoiler alert, because, because the power was broken.
Super broken.
But tweaking one value fixed it, and now it's great. So, yay. Oh, yeah. And there was another power that was too weak. The one where the Lodge played two cards, and I need to fix that one. So.
Right.
But other than that, the game is doing really well. I need to add some more cards to it just to get volume up. Mm-hmm. But honestly, at that point, it's kind of done for now. Like, I'm gonna make a nicer prototype, take it to Gen Con, and try and test it out with some people and stuff. But, I mean,
You were thinking about GameCrafter maybe, since it won't really need a lot of graphics.
Right. I did think about that, yeah. Because I could do most of that myself. I'd probably pay for four pieces of artwork, which would be the aliens.
Sure.
And then other than that, I would just, So maybe like $100 in artwork, a couple $100 in artwork, just little stuff, right? You know, not too much.
Yeah.
And then, I might try that. So, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, because it's just going to be basically some text on cards.
Right.
About as simple as Finish It was to make. You know?
You think I can find like fair use like flags and stuff out there?
I have to assume.
So.
Yeah. Like, I know the American flag is basically, I mean, it's owned by the people of the country, right? Of America.
Right.
That design. So I have to assume national flags are.
Right. It's just finding a generic enough artwork that no one's going to say is theirs.
Yeah, you know, there's a way to search for that stuff, though. I bet you can find a resource for that.
Or maybe I could just draw over it.
You could do that, too.
That might be kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Draw over it with my sloppy drawing style.
Yeah.
That might be kind of funny.
You could do that, for sure.
I'd have to do that to 12 flags. Let's hope the countries I picked are simpler than, you know.
If they're not simple, you can pick new countries.
Right. True. So, yeah. There's that.
Mm-hmm.
And
Card Game Simulator, which finally, after playing that like four times recently, I finally feel like I got good information out of a playtest. Like I got feedback that I'm able to act on.
Right. Yep.
Because, and I've said this on the show before, that I played it and it was fun, and I know that it's not 100% ready, but I wasn't sure what to do next. So now after this, and I think part of the help was that I didn't play. We had a 6-player game, and hey, 6-player worked. So that was
totally fun,
reassuring. And I didn't play. I just sat out and watched, and everybody else just kind of used cards and tried them, and I could see what didn't work and what was confusing people. So I've got, I think I want to say five or six different cards that either need fixed or cut and replaced with something else.
Right.
So I feel a lot better about that. I have something to do now with that.
Right.
So that's good. Yeah. So.
Excellent. Right. Mm-hmm. So
that was fun.
Sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this topic this week, we're going to talk about,
Designing under restrictions,
right?
Under limitations, self-imposed,
right?
Yeah,
which is, or maybe contest imposed or something. Is this something we've talked about before? But I think it's always worth talking about, simply because I just think it's a worthwhile thing. So many designers do this where they say, "I really want to design a game that uses this. I want to make a game with this." So, mm-hmm. So yeah, let's think about some reasons why you would design under restrictions. Mm-hmm. As a personal challenge, maybe it's because you really love a mechanic and you want to try and get a new, like, gosh, I love this mechanic in other games. Why isn't it in my games?
Well, I did that not too long ago with trying to figure out how to make trading work, and I still haven't succeeded at that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Valiant effort though. And then in addition to that, maybe, like I said, maybe there's a contest and it says you have to have 72 cards or less, or you have to have six dice or something, so designing that way, has its positives and negatives, right? I mean, duh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give your thoughts on some positive and negatives? Do you want me to go first?
Yeah. So, self-imposed limitations and restrictions, I think are healthy, not for every design, but it's a healthy way to make yourself a better designer, because it forces you to find new creative solutions to problems within a limited tool set. And I think some of my more successful games have been done under that, sort of thing. So, like, for example, Epic Monster Tea Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want this game to be about drawing meeples out of a bag,
right.
And I don't want any more components. I mean, in the end, there are some cards, but they're not really necessary. And there's teacups, and that's fun,
but it's not necessary.
It's not necessary, right? The only components that are necessary to the game are some meeples and some fabric bags that you can pull stuff out of and put stuff into,
right?
And so by doing that, by putting that restriction on myself, I had to say, okay, well, what are interesting ways? What are cool ways and dynamic ways to use these things, to make that a compelling experience, to drive difficult decision making, I think anytime you can force yourself to explore limited boundaries more completely is a good thing. It's a healthy thing,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, so those are my initial thoughts.
Cool.
So
let me take the other view, because I love restrictive design, but let's pretend I don't for a minute. It's so stupid.
Man, it's the worst.
It's just the worst. But one other way to think about it is, when you do restrictive design, you don't kind of free your mind to think of other things, which is something like a couple listeners commented that I was doing, right? Because my restrictive design was because I was trying to design within certain publishing constraints, which is a bad reason to do restrictive design. Unless you have a specific goal in mind with a specific publisher.
Yeah.
And at that point I didn't. I was just like, whoa, for publishing, that's probably would be bad. So, there were times when I would, now in my designs, where I've been able to say, like, but what if I just did this? Oh crap. That's great. That makes a huge difference in the game.
Yeah.
It's probably unprintable now, but it makes a great difference in the game, and that's a big deal, right? To do that.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be my argument against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, as in to say a few words for it, I mean, I love the idea of restrictive design, and and I find, like, here's what I find. And this is why I think it works so well for me, is I tend to overcomplicate games, right?
Sure.
I want to add a bunch of mechanics, and I feel like a game's got to do 42 things, I'm bad about just one more thing. I just keep adding more and more and more, and then finally there's five more things, and it's bloated, and it's not fun anymore, at best, and at worst it's unplayable, which maybe if the game's not fun, being unplayable is not that bad, because then, save you some time. But anyways, thinking about it that way, and having it say, like, okay, I want to keep this simple. So I'm going to limit myself to 54 cards or 72 cards with no other things. And that's kind of how Mushmushi started, which is a game I really like. I mean, I said 54 cards, and then I was like, well, let's do 72 because 54 wasn't quite enough, and I really wanted some extra. I really wanted the aliens to have cards, so I bumped it to a 72 card deck, which I think is still, I mean, it's still cheap. It's Water Boom and Washout was 90 cards. So, you know, I mean, that's still a deal compared to that. That's always kind of my benchmark is Water Boom and Washout was 90. So if it's less than that, I like that.
Yeah.
Even though 90 cards is still a decently small game, if it's just a 90 card deck and that's the whole game. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts for it and against it.
So, looking at Saloon Tycoon. Okay. So, that game, could have easily had four or five different resources plus money, plus character pawns and crazy, all kinds of crazy things and multiple different more tile sizes and huge expansive stuff and on and on and on. It could have been that.
If I designed it, it probably would have been that.
But I decided early on that I wanted to limit component size, and I decided that there were good reasons for that because multiple resources may have worked, and it may if the game was designed for that, that might have been a great idea. And for a while, I toyed with that idea,
right?
And,
I remember
and went,
that
went down that road, yeah. But and I think in the initial pitch of Innkeepers, I had different construction types and like staff and stuff. That you had to,
I think you did, yeah.
Right. But I felt like that's a more complicated game than I want to play.
Right.
You know? And if I can simplify it to just one resource called the supply cubes, if I can limit it to that, then I feel like that's going to be a more fun experience for me, easier to teach and easier to play so that as I'm playing that, I can focus more on other goals and other objectives while I'm playing.
And I'd give that as one of the biggest credits to that game is... credits to that game is that you literally can, like, you can teach it in like 2 minutes. It's so easy to teach for an experience that ends up being fairly complex with the choices you have to make. But I mean, you can literally be like, boom, 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 ready to play.
Yeah. And wow, that's okay. And that's one thing that I really like, best about the game is that simple setup, that simple concept. You know, you have tiles and you have these cubes and that's it. And those two things combine and they do a lot of other things. You do a lot of things with those things. But in that space, it's just those two pieces that combine to do all these crazy things.
Right.
By putting that kind of limit on myself in terms of component types. Now, I was willing to go big or small on number of those components. Mm-hmm. You know, and where I ended up, I'm pretty happy with. Of course, it's all still subject to change. But right now, where it is, I like the number of tiles. I like the number of supply cubes, and a lot of that drives game length, which is real important.
Right.
You know, I didn't necessarily say I only want 100 or less of these cubes, and I only want 36 of these tiles. I never said that. I said, let me just see where it works. And if I need more, I need more. If I need less, I need less. But making that decision about not about quantity of one component, but how many different types of components was a restriction that was very beneficial to the design in the end because it made it easier to engage with.
Exactly.
And I don't know about you, but a lot of times when I see a game that has, you know, 10 different resource types and four different sizes of cards and all kinds of different pawns and things out there. And I chips and chits and little tokens. And I just go, I don't know what to do with this. And maybe it's really easy, but I just see that on the table and that's too much for me. I'm not that gamer.
Right. No, you know? And a lot of times I'm not that gamer either. There was a time when I was, but now I really do dig simpler designs. Not there's anything wrong with those big games. We have plenty of friends that love playing those big games. I just had an idea for a mechanic that I'm going to bring up because your game just made me think about it. I was thinking about different resources. I was like, what if, you know, on Saloon Tycoon, every time you built a, you've got this huge pool of money, like say 100 gold, right? Mm-hmm. And every time you build a level, you have to put like 2 gold on it, right? Or X number of gold. The thing you bought determines that. So instead of paying a price up front, or maybe you pay a small price up front, but then the second half of that fee is that you have to put money on that tile, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that money's been stolen from the economy, right? So the economy is going to shrink. And then I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense, because if you were doing that, the economy should be growing, right? Because like you're making the thing. And then I had a cool idea.
Okay.
what if you had a game about a village or something, right? Uh-huh. Some sort of group. And it starts out with a super small economy, right? But uh-huh. every new thing you build, like in your town, it's like gives you this and add 2 gold to the economy.
Oh, sure.
So like, as people are doing stuff, it's constantly adding more gold mm-hmm. to the economy, which is more gold you can earn, but it's also more gold I can earn. You know what sure. I mean? So it's, it kind of sounds like fun. Hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, and you're right. I don't think that would work with Saloon
no,
Tycoon.
No, definitely not.
Because limiting the money available is probably not the... I mean, there's other limitations put in the game, but limiting the purchasing power is probably not the right way to do that. But yeah, so there's only so much purchasing power at the start of the game, and as you spend that money on growing the city, that generates more income and grows the economy. Yeah. There would probably be other things in the game that would shrink the economy back down.
Right. So that would be an interesting thing to manage. Yeah. That would be a fun cooperative game.
Yeah, it would.
Where like you're Absolutely. Trying to keep you've got like a town and. Maybe the name of the game is like Ghost Town, right? And that's the whole goal is you like at some point in the game, you're going to become a ghost town.
It's all
going
to collapse, yeah.
So
the whole economy is going
to
fall apart.
Your goal is to keep that money in the economy.
Right. So you'd have to deal with upkeep, right? There'd have to be some upkeep costs.
And there'd be escalation throughout the game. Right. The more you got, the more it would cost.
Yeah.
The less likely you could pay. And then you're going to have to start closing things down. It kind of could be fun, you know?
Dude, that's a good idea.
You've got a game where you've got a... you start out with like... 4 things, right?
Mm-hmm.
One for each player, or 1 thing for each player, whatever that is. And you ramp up, and then mm-hmm. the town dies. So,
that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of depressing, but I think that'd be a fun game to play.
Yeah,
I'll pitch that game. I don't know if it'd be any good, but I'll pitch that game. So
yeah, that's a fun idea.
I like the idea of managing the economy, growing and shrinking.
Me too.
And
yeah.
the goal just being to get to last as long as possible.
Right.
Or maybe there are goals you need to... Obviously, yeah, you don't want to just last as long as possible.
There's until it ends, yeah.
Goals you need to achieve before it ends.
Right.
Before
you have to get
dies.
Your population to a certain size or something. Or,
well, or figure out ways to relocate everyone, you know, in the end or something like that. Or
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. That's cool. There's a new SimCity. Well, it's not SimCity. It's a new game called City Skylines.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a SimCity game, but mm-hmm. it's not SimCity brand.
Right.
It's supposed. Yeah, I've heard it's really good. I really want to play that. It's been a long time since I played a good SimCity.
Huh, yeah.
And the one that came out a year or so ago, apparently was garbage. So
was that the one that came out on like console or?
No, it's a PC game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got one for my iPad. I'm into my iPod and iPhone and I did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah, I think that one's inspired by the PC one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which would make sense if that one wasn't good.
Right.
Speaking, did you hear the big news about Nintendo? Nintendo
mobile
licensed
games.
Mobile games.
Yeah, well, they're not licensing it, no.
Well, Nintendo finally agreed that they can make mobile games for Mario stuff.
Yeah, they decided that they made a deal with this company called DNA. DNA is like either the biggest or second biggest mobile game producer in Japan. So they have a deal with them where they will use some of DNA's resources and DNA's talent to publish mobile games, but they will be produced and published by Nintendo.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just mean that's so
oh, it's
fantastic,
great. Yeah.
Right?
It's about time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because when I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, there's never been a Mario game. Like I had played Sonic games and stuff like that, but like
they also said no ports. They're not going to just port old NES or Super NES games over. It's going to be all new games.
I like Nintendo because they're cool like that.
Yeah, specifically designed for the mobile experience for touch and all that kind of stuff.
Which
and
is good.
That's the right way to do it.
Yes.
Don't just give me a gamepad on like iPhone screen.
Right.
To touch.
Honestly,
that's
that
terrible.
Would be better than the regular controllers for original Super Mario Brothers.
Not necessarily. At least you had tactile feedback with those.
Kind of.
You know.
Those controllers are kind of garbage.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. They're not good. The NES controllers, but they were functional and you didn't have to look at them to use them because you could feel it and you can tell where your thumbs were, you know?
Good point.
So, and that's super important with video games, with console games, controllers.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. I think we covered that topic.
Boy, we lost track. Okay. Well, if we're going to move on, then I think we decided, because neither one of us was really ready for our next round of pitches.
To be clear, I had a pitch.
Oh, all right. I'm the deadbeat who's not ready.
You know how happy it makes me when you're like, I don't have a pitch. I'm like, sweet, I have a pitch for the next two pitches because we're going to do a challenge and then I'm going to have a pitch.
So I did
too, because this ghost town idea.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a cool idea, man.
I really do too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You know what? And every time you lean back, you move that poster that's behind you, and I'm like, every time I'm like, it's gonna fall, but it doesn't fall. It's not gonna fall. I know that now.
Okay, good. Makes me glad because I don't want it to fall because it's water balloon washout.
Is it glass? It's plastic, so it's not gonna break. But you could break the frame. Anyway,
the frame is only like $10.
All right, so I'll just get a hammer and I'll break it right now. How would that sound for
good luck
you?
Finding a
dude,
hammer at my
Mr.
house,
Mr. Guy. I there are some wooden blocks that are shaped like train cars right next to us. I could just pick those up.
That thing is heavy duty.
Yeah, I bet.
It's like 6 feet long or something. Like
yeah,
that.
It looks like it's, well, it's not it's, six no. continuous feet, but.
No, it's probably like 3-4 feet long.
In what is that? Six sections, each about 12 inches long.
Yeah.
Well, probably about 10 inches long, and they're all hinged, so they're not connected.
Right.
But I could pick up one of those. Because that one right there, that boxcar I'm looking at, looks like it's made from a couple of 2x4s.
Yeah, it does.
You know? So I could use that, like, to smash something.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Smash.
Hey, so we were talking about a pitch challenge.
What? Really?
So we decided to do a pitch challenge. We've done some of those, and we looked something up at BoardGameMizer or something. We love doing that, but we wanted to do something different this time. So I suggested to Rob, let's do a component challenge again, where we get crazy components, and we decided we would get the weirdest components we could find. And then we'd put them in a bag and make the other person draw out of the bag at least three, more if they want to be daring, and to pitch a game based on that. So
additional restrictions. So we have to incorporate the minimum three components that we pull out of the bag, or in your case, the can.
Yes.
But we can add whatever we want to it in addition to that?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Anything else? No theme restrictions, no component restrictions beyond that. We just have to incorporate these three things. And let's say we need to incorporate them in some kind of
meaningful way.
Meaningful way, yes.
Not that's just good. Like, yeah. Oh, and also then you have, you know,
also there's
a Nintendo
this,
controller.
This is just a little thing that matches what the theme is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No. It has to be some meaningful use to those in the game.
Right.
Okay.
I'm pretty excited.
All right. So you're going to go this week. Yeah, I'm going to go next week.
Yep.
Okay. I brought and I picked a bag of stuff from my house that Jason's going to draw from. And next week, I'm going to draw from a little tin can that has stuff that Jason picked out.
Right, and neither one of us got to see any of this ahead of time.
No idea.
That we promise.
Right. So and my bag is a little bit see through, but hopefully you're not looking too closely, huh?
No. Okay. I could see there was stuff in there, but I can't tell what it is.
All right. So, are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
And we'll once we pick these things out, we'll take a good picture of them. We'll make sure they're in the show notes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, and no feeling around. Just grab.
This first thing is a room key to Hera's Casino.
Yeah.
At the Mardi Gras Tower.
Last time I went to Vegas, that's where I stayed. Kept the room key. If I keep that, then I can get a discount next time I come back on something. I don't know.
That
actually might be my player's card, but I think it's also the room key.
I bet it's not your room key.
It is the room key, but I think it's also a player card. Next is,
two items.
You grabbed two accidentally.
So I got a Stegosaurus.
Little rubber Stegosaurus. He's red.
And a locust, maybe?
Locust pencil topper or cricket.
It can go on your finger or a pencil top.
Yeah.
Or do something else.
Okay. So is that your three? Or
I got that two as one. I feel like I should grab another one.
Okay. You don't have to.
Am I missing good stuff? Is there?
I mean, there's still stuff in
there. This already feels like a softball. Like, I know exactly what I'm going to do with this.
Oh, really?
So
already?
Let's try and make it harder.
All right. One more.
A little
carved marble elephant.
Yes.
This is a softball for you.
This
is going to be too easy.
Yeah. Should I grab something else?
No, dude. I mean,
I don't mind.
If you want to,
because right now these components are all going to do the exact same thing.
Are they?
So, okay. Yeah. Let me grab
one more
something
thing. We'll see what it is.
Some
Pez.
That makes this a lot harder.
What flavor?
Strawberry
Pez.
Yes.
All right.
See, I'll be honest. That last time I felt around, I thought I felt like an action figure, which wasn't going to make it any more complicated. So I grabbed the.
That's fine. Yeah, we got to
show me what else is in there.
Okay. So other stuff I've got in here. I've got the action figure is an Indiana Jones action figure.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I've got a glass rook from a chess set.
Nice.
See, that's a legit piece.
That is.
I have a little penny gem. Little penny gem thing, you know?
Okay. Yep.
I have two dice. I have a D8 and a D10 that has tens on it, not ones.
Yep.
And the last thing I have in there is a 1 pound British coin. British nice. Pound coin.
Nice.
So that's everything that was in my bag.
I think the Pez was the worst thing.
Yeah, I was hoping you would get the Pez.
Yeah, I didn't know what the Pez was when I grabbed it. I just felt Indiana Jones' leg.
Yeah.
And was like, that's another figurine. I'm going to grab something else. Okay. So
I'm glad that you got the Pez.
Me too. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So.
Oh, we need to make sure we take a picture. Oh, well, we can do that after we record.
We're going to forget.
We can do it right now. Okay. Right now. All right.
All right. So, okay. So this is how I see this game. You are. I don't want to do this. I can think of the way I would normally do it, but I'd like to do something a little different.
Okay.
So you're all scientists, right?
Scientists,
right? And you have invented, scientists who've invented some devices. Actually, no, you're janitors.
Janitors?
You're janitors.
Are we in a science lab?
At a science lab.
Good. Okay.
So they're a scientist.
I like the way this is going.
And the scientists have figured out the key to miniaturization and enlargement, just like in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Just like that.
Just like that.
My favorite movie.
Yes. So here's the deal, right? These little tokens, and I could add more to the game, right?
If
I wanted. Yeah. So these tokens, the Stegosaurus, I back myself in a corner with that, the locust and the elephant. So the locust and the Stegosaurus doesn't exist, which is a problem. So these scientists are also doing DNA manipulation and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Clearly.
Yeah.
They're doing a bunch of stuff.
It's a fantasy world, man.
And there's this locust. And so they're doing all sorts of things.
Is it a locust or is it a cricket?
I don't know. Cricket. A locust is just a large cricket, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less. I think
so. Some listeners are going to tell us we're wrong, and that's okay. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
You've figured out how to manipulate things. Like you can make tiny elephants and all sorts of stuff, right? So in the game, there's lots of these random things, right?
Okay.
And I picture in the game, cause I don't have to make it. The game is like, there's a big, like almost like fishing. No, more like, you know, those things you put in your garage and you like open the drawers and like you have like bits and stuff in there, like, you know, drill bits and stuff.
Just a organizer kind of tray thing, jig thing.
Picture one of those.
Okay, picturing it. It's in my mind. Okay, I
except
can see
for
it.
It's activated by key cards.
Ooh, key cards.
Hey. Key cards.
Key cards.
Okay. So each of you is a janitor. Each of you has a different key card, right?
Okay.
And that's the base key card you've been assigned. But in addition, there's a bag of other key cards.
Mm-hmm.
The key cards all access different levels of things. Now, the secrecy levels of the things in this wall of vault, we'll say, of stuff.
Sure.
It gets better as it goes down. You know, obviously the Stegosaurus is going to be towards the bottom, right? He's going to be like, oh, he's high security because, you know,
because he's a secret. Stegosaurus.
It's a Stegosaurus, dude. What if somebody enlarged him to be full size? So, so what's happening here is you're trying to find these things. Why? Because you want to steal stuff? No, that's lame. Because, you know, you all have kids and you all want to give them the sweetest, most awesome pets ever, right?
Okay.
So you might open it up and get Cricket. Who cares? Now, granted, it does glow green. And there was probably some nuclear waste happening with that. Maybe it's got superpowers. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But the elephant, man. Miniature elephant? That'd be pretty awesome. Cool. Or Stegosaurus? What kid's not going to want a Stegosaurus for a pet, even if it's miniaturized, right?
Yeah, right.
So the idea is, throughout the game, you're trying to get the key cards that you need to get the things that you need. Now, this is where I'm going to go a little crazy, because I don't have to design this game for real. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that this is computerized, this big thing. Well, clearly, you're using key cards, so it's a computerized...
Has to be.
...vault thing.
Yeah.
So the game has an electronic component, too. and at the beginning of the game, it's randomized. It's randomized as to what settings it has and which key cards are going to open which things. The only thing we know is the very first level will always be opened with your key card. No, let's change that. Whenever you want to open something, you're always going to have to put in your key card first and then a key card that gives you access to it.
Hmm.
That's because they track who goes into which places, right? So if you're constantly going in taking stuff, they're going to figure out that you, Rob, the cleaner, the janitor, is the one who's stealing stuff, right?
Okay. I don't mean to interrupt your flow here, but I'm going to.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not sure that... So these animals here, they're the prize.
Yes.
I'm not sure if that's truly meaningful integration.
but they have point values and stuff like that. How is that not meaningful integration?
Well, that could easily just be done with a playing card, man.
Okay.
It's not something, the kind of thing that you can only do with these little figurines here.
See, but it's tough because, right, because miniatures are meant to represent something, right?
Yeah.
It's a design choice to use miniatures instead of to use chits or tokens, right?
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to argue with them. I'm just saying, like, I don't know how you make these things, like, unless I say this game is packaged with live animals, which seems like a poor choice.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Then go on.
So that's, I mean, go on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you want to get not to meaningful. Let's talk about the Pez when we get there. Okay. So, so in addition to that, so the main core of the game is like, so there's this pattern you have to figure out and you've got this sheet like in Clue and you're trying to keep track of which cards do what. Now every card has a different symbol on it, a couple digits on it, we'll say, and those couple digits theoretically are going to correspond to something they can open, but you have to understand, think of it like a pad cipher.
Mm.
You know what that is, right?
I think so. So explain it for the listeners.
Yeah, okay. So I may be wrong about this, but a pad cipher is the idea that there's you've got a pattern of letters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those letters don't make any sense together. It's like A, Q, B, X, Y, Z. But you have a keypad, right? And that pad tells you what the code breaker is. So it says A equals this, or let's say that it's a standard, there's a name for this, but like a standard, like it's a super simple one, is you just take the alphabet, right?
Yeah.
A through Z, and then you pick a random thing to represent one, right? So if M represents one, then N is two, all the way up through Z, and then you keep going back to A all the way until you get back up to L, would be 26, okay?
Okay.
So if you know that M is one, that allows you to determine what everything else is, and which key cards would open which slots. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And since that's randomized at the beginning of the game, so you're going to do some trial and error to try and figure that out. But in the meantime, during your trial and error phase, you might also just score some good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to get to that last section, you're not going to be able to guess. You're going to have to be able to figure it out. I'm not honestly 100% sure how you can make that work, but I mean, if you can make an electronic vault for people to use in a game, I'm confident we can design that part. So let's get to this last part here.
Yeah.
And this is important. So there is a robotic monkey guard.
Yeah.
And that robotic monkey guard is up in your business.
Mm-hmm.
He's going around this place, right? He is trying to follow you. And if he pops out and sees you stealing something.
Yeah. He's going to be like, oh, dude, I'm Robo Monkey. What are you doing here?
Unless. Ooh. See, he has a weakness.
Oh.
For Pez.
Oh.
So each player at the beginning of the game is going to get one sleeve of Pez, right? Okay. Now, during the game, there are sleeves of Pez also hidden in some of those vaults, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you get a sleeve of Pez, you can use those to distract him. The higher level security, the more Pez it's going to take to buy him off so that he leaves you alone so that you can steal his stuff, right? Okay.
All right.
Now, that's a meaningful part of the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The winner is the one who gets the bestest stuff to give to their kids. Yeah. And the game ends when the first person gets caught.
Okay.
Or when you're out of animals, but somebody would get caught before that, probably.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
That's what I have so far.
It's not bad. It's not bad. So, I like the Robo Monkey. I'm a big fan of the Robo Monkey. I like the electronic key card stuff, and I like the codes.
I mean, I guess I look at the miniatures like this. What's the point of having tokens instead of miniatures if you're going to go to the trouble of having a vault that opens with key cards, right?
Here, hand me that Stegosaurus and hand me that key card. Okay. So the first thing that I thought of with this, all right? And I'm going to want you to take a picture of this with your phone that also can go in the show notes. If there's some way that you can, like, hang the card or prop the card in with the Stegosaurus's spines.
Okay.
You know, some kind of stacking option there. And I can't get it to like go. I can't get it to stay. So the Stegosaurus spines would have to be like manufactured better. But
okay. So you'd be stacking stuff?
Mm-hmm. Well, so what I was thinking is you're decorating your Stegosaurus.
Okay.
You know, we're decorating our Stegosaurus with all kinds of interesting things that we're trying to attach to his spines. And we could maybe make the Stegosaurus sit or stand on top of the elephant while we decorate him.
Okay. That's not a game, Rob. That's an activity.
Well, yeah, you're right.
It all fell apart.
It all fell down.
So, yeah, that's that. That's pretty exciting.
All right. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
So, all right. Well, this was a couple things here.
A strange experience.
We got a message from a couple.
Oh, so that's it then, huh?
That's it. That's moving it. On.
All right. Yeah, Jason said, I'm done with that because that was dumb.
Yeah.
All right. I'm putting this back in the bag then. If you're done, I'm just putting it. Fine. You don't like my components. I get it.
I thought your components were good. I'm happy with the game I came up with.
Well,
so.
Well, good. I'm going to eat that Pez later.
You do it. I thought about eating it just to make you mad.
That would have made me mad too because that's my Pez.
Okay.
You jerk.
So we got these accounts from Fromage.
Care.
And he called us and I'm going to just let you hear.
Or is it Fromage?
I don't know.
It's probably Fromage.
The way you pronounce stuff annoys me. Shut up.
That's how you say you're cheese so in stupid. French, I want to say.
Hey. So I've been listening to you guys for a while. My name's Dave Schallert. I just wanted to call in to let you know that you really have to put the theme song back to the front of the show. You have to do it. I can't live without hearing the chaff before I hear you guys talk. So, that's it. Goodbye.
All right, so yeah, so that is a good message.
Oh man, a little love for DJ Dr. Rock and what he put together there for us. Really, you don't like the jingle? Oh man.
I love the jingle, but I confess there are some times that I miss the,
But the jingle's so much fun. It's jingly. I mean, it's so happy. It's orchestrated. I mean, I don't know. Well, I'm curious now to hear what other builders think. I mean,
other people have said thumbs up to the new theme song.
Do you like the new theme song, or do you want us to go back to the DJ Dr. Rock piece? Let us know. I mean, we want to make you guys happy. Hey, if anybody out there wants to record a new theme song for us, we're open to that.
Do it up.
Yeah, make that happen. Or if you want to sing your version of the theme song, go for it.
We own the theme song, so we do whatever we want with it.
Yeah,
so,
we can mess with it.
Do we have dual track of that, or no, is it just one track?
No, it's just a mono track.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Sweet if we had dual track. You should email that guy and ask if we can get it.
How do you define split track? Define that. What do you mean by that?
Vocals in one and music in the other.
Okay.
That's not a stereo track. You should ask the guy for it. See if he's got it. See if he'd send it to us.
I don't know.
It'd be sweet.
I'd probably have to pay him a lot more money for that.
Why? We own the rights to it.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I can ask. Whatever.
Worth asking. Be like, hey, by the way, can we get this? You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyways, we have another listener email here. This says, getting in touch with from across the pond. All right, we love it.
Yeah.
Love the podcast. Listening to you guys through the process and giving your feedback always makes my commute to work a bit more bearable.
Good.
That is great. Your recent casts about playtesting the Engine Wrecker game and Poison Playtesters remind me of an interview I read with Bruno Fiduti.
Ooh.
That makes us feel smart.
He's one of our favorite Brunos.
Yeah. He's my second favorite Bruno, in which he mentions that sometimes he'll only playtest the game a handful of times before calling it done. That's because he can, because he's Bruno frickin' Fiduti.
Yeah.
My question to you guys is, what is the lowest number of playtests you've ever done with a game before knowing it was good to go? By extension, do you think there is a golden number that you try to achieve before making the call on being game ready? Great listening. Regards, Bevan.
Thanks, Bevan.
Are you sure it's not Beaven or Boven?
That I'm
Sorry,
not sure about.
I'm just being a jerk because that's how you are all the time.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm just trying to help you, help culture you. When something says Fromage, it's probably fromage. But it might be Fromage. I don't know. I don't want to judge that guy.
What if he's a mage with an afro?
He could be.
Someone make that movie.
Afromage. Make that game, Jason.
But then call it a fromage.
A fromage.
You're an idiot. Idiot.
Anyway, so what was his question? I already forgot.
Oh, so yeah. He wants to know the number of play tests we would do. Well, I don't. First of all, I don't think there's a golden number.
No, I don't. You know, I can't.
I think the game for me with the least amount of playtests before I knew it was ready was Water Balloon Washout.
Yeah,
definitely. I played like 3 games of it and was like, this game is good to go. And I made some tweaks, and I probably played another 50 to 75 or 100 playtests even before I put it on Kickstarter. But after like 3 to 5 playtests, I was like, this game is done.
Yeah.
And for that game, that was actually a lot of testing because it's so like. I think I did that in like 3 sessions. I mean, it wasn't hard to do.
Yeah. For me, I think it was Tea Party. Everyone wants to do Tea Party. I think the first time we played that, it was pretty shaky. But after 1 playtest, I got the economy, the point values
right,
worked out pretty close. And I think it was maybe 3, maybe 4 more tests after that, and it was done. And the balance was, I was happy with the balance. And I think that was it. I think it was done. I was like, and I really haven't made any meaningful changes to the game, significant meaningful changes to the game since then, because I just haven't been able to think of anything that could make the game more fun for me personally.
Right. Well, everybody likes it. I mean, people always want to play it. So,
yeah. So, you know what? And then the other one was finish it. 1 play test. I knew that was done.
Yep.
And that all we had to do is write some more cards.
Helps that was a party game.
Yeah, that helps, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, scoring and nothing like that mattered. The things you would need to balance. You know, so that's the thing. Like, how much balancing does your game need? If it needs a lot of balancing, it needs a lot of playtests. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, that's really... I mean, Card Game Simulator, I mean, you've done a few playtests with that, but like...
I think total... I probably played that game 7 times total so far.
And it's about done. I mean, you're gonna make a couple tweaks. You'll play it a couple more times, but... You're not worried about the game being super balanced.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's going to have swingy things in it, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's hidden scoring, so it doesn't really matter because you wouldn't know the game.
And that's the nature of the game is to be silly. You know what? Actually, Rumplebum, I've probably playtested 7 or 8 times before I felt like I was happy with it and put it on GameCrafter. Yeah. Right.
That's cool, yeah.
And I mean, part of that, of course, was because I was trying to get it in for a contest on GameCrafter, so I didn't want to... I just didn't have the luxury of a lot of time and tweaking.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah.
So that answers that.
But yeah, no golden number. There's no such thing.
Right.
You know, 10,000 times? They say you do something 10,000 times. Or
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours, that's what it is. And then you're an expert.
And you'll hate your game. So
right.
That's
and I'm
good.
Not going to play any game that I have 10,000 times.
No. Or even, so if it's an hour-long game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Any other questions?
No, I think we're good.
No,
for
we
now.
Did have something.
Did you have something
from Bo Steverson?
Oh yeah.
On Twitter, he made some good comments.
Oh yeah,
close back up.
If you want to read them, you can. Otherwise, I can tell you what they said.
I'm gonna read them. So Bo says, listening to the bonus episode, but wanted to point out the printer that is shipping the game still. Oh, so he's talking about the bonus episode where we talked about Fifth Street in their bankruptcy. So he says, listening to the episode, but wanted to point out the printer that is still shipping the games still probably would have just had to throw them out if not agreeing to ship them to people. They can't sell or use them as suggested because they don't own any rights to the game. I do commend them, though, for taking individual shipping requests and working with the end customers. It would have been easier to throw them out and write off the product waste. And he's absolutely right about that. So for the shipper, we're again talking about Fifth Street Games. So where they had the bankruptcy and the printer, the company who printed the games agreed to, still send all the copies out to the Kickstarter backers.
Right.
And what Bo's point is that, you know, if they didn't do that, they would have just had to throw them all away. And this way, I mean, they're not going to make any money off them anyway, so at least they can get rid of them. They don't have to just destroy them. And I think we said in our bonus episode, hopefully, maybe by doing this, they can get a little interest in a wholesaler or something. We'll maybe want to pick them up at a reduced cost or something.
Well, and see, Bo was saying they can't do that, but I guess I was kind of under the assumptions that Phil gave them the rights to do that.
Yeah, me too. That was the impression that I'd gotten.
Because he wants the games to get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you know, who knows? But I thought that it was an interesting comment. You know, we still haven't heard a lot of other feedback on the whole Fifth Street fallout. You know, of course, we're a couple of weeks behind the ball on that, just with our recording schedule. But still, I'm still interested to see where it goes.
Cool.
Yeah.
I do have a couple more comments from Robin Gibson. One is for you. You may have to take, you may have a bit of an issue socially with a game that has cards. Oh, sorry. This is, yeah, never mind. Let me come back to that. I want to do that one second. That one's for me. It seems that a fully damaged component you own should, this is for Smithereens, I assume, should explode at the end of your turn rather than when it takes damage, so that you have to a chance to fix it to avoid first turn engine smashing, as seen here on the bonus episode. So basically what he's saying was you should have a turn to deal with it, like even though it's destroyed.
Uh-huh.
And then it explodes.
Okay.
So you could try and deal with it, or you could dump it.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
This other one is interesting. This is about the Mushy Mushy playtest. Okay. He says, you may have a bit of an issue socially with a game that has cards with groups of people on it for different cultures that assign value to them. Have you considered doing set collection or something to groups could be different but not better? Another thing to avoid is the allo problem is to use a meaningful phrase like, where's the bathroom? So two things. First, that's not a bad idea to use. I was thinking about asking native speakers of these other languages, hey, let me know, and native speakers to other languages, if you're listening, let me know like a fun greeting, like, what's up? How's it going? That sort of thing in your language, the equivalent of that.
Yeah.
Send that to me. And I may just use that instead. Cause they don't all have to just be hello, you know? Okay. So the assigning values to groups, think you misunderstood the way we're doing that. It's not like indicative of a value of the group. I mean, I guess it could be seen that way. No one who's played it has mentioned that.
Yeah, that didn't occur to me either.
I mean, I obviously want to be sensitive to that, but I also, it doesn't feel like an issue to me, but I'm a white dude from America, so maybe that's not the case, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think I can see if it's not handled well, I can see that being a thing. Or maybe he's operating under the assumption that English is always going to be 20 points and Spanish is always going to be 5 points.
And that's
it's not structured that way.
No.
And you might have English and Spanish on a 20-point card and on a 5-point card.
Right.
You know, and each card has three different greetings on it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That said, I will look at that
to make sure that
you
sorted.
Know, it's not like three whitey white countries and, you know, then countries with like Asians and Africa and things like that, like the 5-pointers. But I don't think that's the case.
I don't think so either.
I can tell you the way I did the scoring was I just listed the countries out in as many separate orders as I could and then straight down the line assigned point values to them. So I didn't give it any thought. Had I given it thought, I would have given US like 5 points every time because that's funny to me because that's where it would be made and that's who designed it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. There's a term for this, but there's something, I guess it's perceived discrimination versus intentional discrimination.
Right.
That, I mean, whether you're intending to discriminate or not, what the results end up being, are what matters.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's the right way to phrase that, but you know what I mean?
It makes sense. So,
considering that you're dealing with a multicultural game, that's certainly something to consider.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. The set collection is actually not a terrible idea.
No. Yeah.
The idea that you would just set it up so that, like, if I could get these, these groups of people.
Yeah.
But see, then, I mean, I could spin it as, if I'm combining groups of people, why am I making the choices that I'm making? And what if I have these three groups of people together and somebody takes offense to that because they're groups of people that, like, maybe, like, don't like each other or something? You know, so I don't. Yeah, there's a lot of possible issues with that. So,
sure.
But I will definitely take a look at it. And I certainly appreciate the feedback, Robin. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's all we have.
I think that's it. Yeah. So we're good. Thanks everybody for listening. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to billandgamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_design. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review. review on iTunes. Leave comments on our show notes on the website. Also, the website, buildinggamepodcast.com. You can link there. You can get a copy of Water Balloon Washout for yourself. You can also link to the Grain Crafter website, where you can get copies of my games, which are the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, Epic Monster Tea Party, and Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. Have I forgotten anything?
I do not think so.
Okay, then that's all we got. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hey, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 day.